In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose. As long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we're going to be talking about the Bears post-combine. We're going to be talking about Cubs and White Sox spring training and a little Blackhawks. But first, like, thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You could see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. Season is going on right now, so make sure you head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swarski Sports sent you. Alex, how are you doing?
I am doing well. Really enjoyed the nice weather today. It's been such a roller coaster. We've had snow. We've had tornadoes. We've had more freezing cold. And we've had more spring-summer weather. It is just a zigzag.
Right. And we're recording this on March 3rd. And on March 4th, probably when you're listening to this, it's supposed to get into the mid-70s.
Yeah, and then more storms.
Yeah, it's just wild. What are you going to do?
Chicago, yeah. And how crazy is it that there's a tornado warning? Mm-hmm. You know, people are going downstairs. It's warm. You know, there's severe weather, lots of lightning, thunder, a lot of rain. And then the next morning, there are snow flurries falling, and it's 20 degrees. Like a 50-degree swing, and just from one spectrum to the other in less than 24 hours.
Yep. And, you know, a lot of people I know were taking shelter for the tornado warning, and I stupidly drove to the movies with my friend and saw Madam Web, which was terrible. So,
so I've heard.
while people were, you know, sheltering in place, I was driving to see a dog crap movie.
Yeah, okay. You could have just stopped at, oh, I was seeing Madam Web being stupid. You didn't have to put the context of you were doing it during a tornado warning.
You know, I don't really worry so much because in my lifetime, what have we had, like one tornado that actually hit Chicago? And it didn't even hit Chicago. It hit the water. I'm not that worried. You know, if this was Plainfield or something, yeah, I probably would have buckled down and gone down to the basement.
Well, I don't know if, I mean, this was before your time even, and some of our listeners might remember when my mom was a little kid. She grew up in Oak Lawn, and I don't know if you know, but the tornado that hit that area.
That hit the roller rink.
Yeah.
My mom and my uncle had friends that died in that.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
My elementary school still had a plaque up honoring the kids that died in it.
No kidding. Because yeah. My mom lived in the Oak Lawn area, and she says she remembers being in her basement. There was like a crawl space under the basement stairs where her, my uncle slash godfather and grandmother were taking refuge while my grandfather was across the street at his restaurant. You know, they obviously didn't get hit, but it wasn't far. I mean, oh, they were 79th and Pulaski. That's not far from where it hit.
Yeah. I mean, my mom grew up at like roughly 111th and Ridgeland.
Okay.
So, yeah, not far from there. So is that the area, the roller rink, you know?
Yeah.
Got it. So yeah, it was a scary thing, and it's a, you know, that's why my school district, which, you know, we had like my high school district had Oak Lawn in it. Like a lot of my family lives in Oak Lawn now. But that whole area, they're just like hypersensitive to the tornadoes. So we used to do tornado drills all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, she is too. My mom is too. Like whenever this happens, whenever a tornado is in the area, you know, she takes it very seriously. And she's made that very clear. Like, listen, I'm sensitive about this because when I was 7, 8 years old, you know, I survived a historic tornado in the Chicagoland area because I believe that was rated an F4 on the original Fujita scale. So to have a tornado of that size in this area, insanely rare. It's once every few decades, because you mentioned Plainfield, that was a few years before I was born, but I've read into that too. That was massive, obviously, but
Plainfield got it twice. That whole town got demolished twice in a decade.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, Plainfield. That's that's right on the edge there of Tornado Alley.
Right, right. And, we've had some tornadoes in this western suburb area, but most of them have been F0s, F1s. Though, do you remember 2 years ago when that one hit Woodridge? That was pretty big. I mean, no one was hurt, but the damage was pretty extensive.
Well, it's wild. So the other day, I saw this, these pictures, and it was a Chicago. It was like the city of Chicago. It was the alley, so you could see the garages in the alley, and the telephone poles were knocked down, like parts of garages were taken out, and I'm like, oh my God, did Chicago actually get a tornado? No, it was a drunk driver drove through the alley like 100 miles an hour and just took everything out.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, it looked like a tornado, though.
Yeah. I mean, yeesh.
That SUV was not fooling around.
If it made it look like that, holy crap.
I mean, I didn't think a car would be able to take maybe one telephone pole. Yeah, okay, but now it got a couple of them.
Jeez, that must have been a pretty strong SUV then.
Yeah. Oh, there's a, and the snippet had, or they had like a snippet of like a camera footage where they caught it, but it was like so short and like sped up that I couldn't, it just looked like a blur going through and smashing just everything.
Well, you gotta have a good laugh every time you see like security footage from some American institution or neighborhood, because here we are in 2024, we have the most sophisticated video technology we've ever had, and yet so much of these videos, so much of this footage, the quality, it's like, oh, here's the security footage of something happening. Well, there's like literally 3 pixels on the screen.
Yes, what you need is like any of those like cop TV shows, and they're like enhance, and it just keeps hitting enhance until it's like a a high resolution photo of the person's face.
Yeah, exactly. It's like an episode of Law and Order where it's like, oh, hey, here's like a 4 pixel picture. Enter, enhance, enter, enhance, enter, enhance. Oh, there's a high definition picture all of a sudden. Look at that.
Yeah, it starts looking like a old school Atari 2600 game. And then by the time it's done, it's a high resolution photo.
Yeah, you go from Atari to PS5 with a couple clicks of an old computer clicky keyboard enter key.
Yeah, with Benson and Stabler leaning over your shoulder.
Yeah, that's right.
Hit the enhance button. Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that one. Oh, yeah. Hit it again.
Hit it again as he holds his cup of coffee.
All right. Where should we start today?
Well, I know there's a lot of talk about the NFL Combine, and I think that, what we've been talking about on this show for a long time is obviously what's going to happen with the quarterback, not only on this show, but every corner of Chicago sports media. And I think that the combine, no one's going to spell it out for you exactly how it's going to go. But I think the first thing that I do want to say, and I don't like going in depth in this because I'm so tired of talking about it, but because it's relevant, I really do feel like we're on the path to trading Justin Fields and drafting Caleb Williams. That's just really what I feel like right now.
Yeah, I was literally in the same boat while I was like writing some notes down. I'm like, I'm tired of talking about it. And I have a personal preference of what I would do if I was GM, but it doesn't matter because I'm not. But it seems like the winds are blowing towards the trading of Justin Fields and the drafting of a quarterback. And I know that this is lying season, and I know that there's nothing definitive, but the fact that by this time last year, there was already a framework in place for trading the number one pick, makes me feel like it's not in play. And it's one of those things where, again, this is lying season, so I don't believe anybody, but it feels like there's so much smoke that there's got to be a fire towards the trading Justin Fields.
Yeah, and I mean, I just really, I don't like to read too much into stuff that we tend to overread into, but Justin Fields kind of went on that podcast. He talked about kind of being done with all the chatter and unfollowing the Bears' social media and explaining all that. I mean, and again, I feel like I'm falling into that trap of reading into everything that I try to avoid, but to me, it just feels like we're kind of in the early stages of a divorce.
I would agree. And, I know some people are saying, oh, Ryan Poles slipped up and talked about, if you listen to the whole context, they asked about it and he said, if that's the plan, he would like to do it early. I don't think he's that foolish to tell his game plan, but it seems to me that this is the path. And I heard, I don't like I normally like Danny Parkins a lot, and I don't like his gung-ho-ness towards just Caleb Williams or bust. But he said something about the two camps, and it really makes sense. It's those folks that are, in gambling terms, those folks that are willing to go all in and make big bets are tend to be in the Caleb Williams camp. And those people that, don't want to bet, they don't want to lose money, they're risk averse are in the Justin Fields camp. Because here's, regardless of what happens, if the Bears would have gotten the number six pick from Carolina, this would be a moot point. They're not trading Justin Fields, I don't think. I think the only reason that this is even a thing is because they got the number one pick.
Would you, let me ask this. What if they had a shot at a Drake May and they thought Drake May, now here's the thing. They might not think Drake May would be worth drafting at that spot, but if they did, do you think they would?
If what spot are you saying the Bears would draft in?
Let's say five or six, like you said.
Okay, and a Drake May falls to them.
Right, and if Drake May's there and they like him, because here's my honest question is, to your point, is how much of this is Justin Fields and for what he did and what they think he's going to be versus the high ceiling of Caleb Williams and the opportunity to take any player you want? Because if you weren't picking first, you're most likely not getting Caleb Williams, like you said, but and I want to emphasize this again too. Ryan Poles did not draft Justin Fields. So would this be a situation if they even liked Drake May, where Poles says, you know what? We've done our evaluation of Fields. We want to take our own guy. Because I think last year they were all in on seeing what Justin Fields could do. They were trading that pick no matter what. So this year, after another year of Justin Fields, with this opportunity, is it opportunistic? Is it their way of saying we want to move on? Or is the opportunistic just part of both sides of the equation? Hey, you know what? We have this opportunity and we're looking to make a change at the guard that what we want. And guess what? We can make any change we want because we got the number one pick. I mean, that's just what I honestly want to know.
So I'm going to address one point is I don't think Ryan Poles is as rigid as maybe a lot of other GMs where it's not our guy, we don't care. Because Jalen Johnson is not one of his guys, but he's about to give him big money. Cole Kmet was not one of his guys, and he gave him some a bunch of money. I think it's a situation where he's going to keep guys that are going to make the Bears better, and not worry about the vanity of, oh, well, it's my guy versus the other team's guy. Because, you know, to be honest with you, yeah, if there's somebody that's underperforming, you the thing about it being a new GM and not having drafted that player is you have no connection to them, and you can move on without having that sense of, well, I drafted him. I want to see this through. I want everyone to see what I saw when I drafted him. Like, I get that part of it, but I don't understand, if a player is a quality player, why you would want to get rid of him just because you didn't draft him. So I don't see that with him. So, you know, I think Justin Fields could have made this a moot point where, you know, you are willing to just say, hey, we're just trading that number one pick, period. But he had a season where you saw marked improvement by the end of the year, but did you see enough? And clearly the front office put enough blame on the offensive coordinator that they fired him. But I think, honestly, I don't think Drake May is falling past third. So if they had five or six, I honestly think they would be looking at which one of those wide receivers they were going to get to pair with Justin Fields.
Yeah, and let me make something just clear on my end. I don't think the fact saying, oh, he didn't draft Justin Fields is their way of saying, well, I didn't draft him, I don't want him. I'm just saying that if they did their evaluation last year through 2023 and they said, you know what, this isn't what we're looking for, I just think you're less inclined to make it work since you didn't draft him. Because I think they really wanted to see if he could be the guy. And I think we saw flashes, but I'm not sure we saw enough. So that's really the whole point I'm getting to. Because, I mean, I really, in my opinion, if Justin Fields wasn't the guy of Ryan Poles, and Ryan Poles just kind of went down that road of, eh, yeah, well, he's not my guy, so whatever, I think they would have replaced him before this. So that's just kind of what I'm getting at, where, you know, he went and did his evaluation and he's more willing to move on because he wasn't his guy, but he wanted to do an honest due diligence first.
And honestly, I have a feeling that they didn't like any of the quarterbacks last year, because I know the revisionist history is you could have drafted CJ Stroud. Could have. I mean, but you could have drafted Tom Brady in the fourth, fifth, sixth round as well, but you didn't. It's, you know, if you go back and look, the vast majority of people had CJ or Bryce Young as the number one quarterback, and for a reason. And there was talks that could CJ Stroud drop down to like seven or eight or lower last year during the draft, you know, like right as the draft was about to start. Could he drop? And he ended up not. So at CJ Stroud, there was a lot of concerns about him, especially after the news of the Wonderlic score leaked. So there, it wasn't like, oh, he was the clear cut number one. It was Bryce Young was the clear cut number one. So I just think that they didn't like those picks and they saw the value that they were getting. And they were like, okay, well, now we're going to be able to put more things around Justin Fields. And this year, I think it's a different story. Is you've got a team that's significantly better than they were the year before. Your defense is started humming after you made the trade for Montez Sweat, and still without any production on the other side of him. And you had, you know, a safety injured, and you had rotating cornerback injuries, and you still had, you know, the second half of the year, one of the best defenses. You're like, okay, now we've got a bunch of money and we've got the number one and the number nine overall pick. I think now they're starting to look at it as, is going quarterback number one a viable option? And I'll be honest, is Caleb Williams showing up to the combine alleviated one of my biggest concerns about him, which was, is he little? And he measured in at 6'1", 214, with 32-inch arms and a 9 3/4-inch hands, which Aaron Rodgers was 6'2", 223, with 32-inch arms and 10-inch hands. And Patrick Mahomes is 6'2", 225, with 33-inch arms and 9 1/4-inch hands. So they are essentially, size-wise, Caleb Williams, Aaron Rodgers, and Patrick Mahomes are very comparable in size. So that was a concern that I had, and that's alleviated. He measured in with the height, you know, the minimum height threshold I was looking for. So, I mean, no matter what happens, I'm rolling hard with the Bears, but I'm if they draft quarterback number one, I am not buying a jersey.
No, neither am I. I don't want to fall for the banana in the tailpipe until we see the results.
Yeah, until he retires, not happening.
Yeah, it's bad mojo.
Yeah, so honestly, I think the winds are blowing of they see the opportunity to draft Caleb Williams, and you know, I know historically those can't miss generational those can't miss generational quarterbacks haven't always been the guy we thought they were. I mean, you look back and Joe Burrow is a can't miss generational quarterback. He's looking real good. Before that, it was Trevor Lawrence, can't miss generational quarterback. And I'll be honest, he's meh.
Yeah, not awful, but he's not lighting the world on fire, that's for sure.
I mean, honestly, I don't know if they're going to pick up his fifth-year option.
I think they will.
So he hasn't lived up to the billing. What's his name from Indianapolis? Andrew Luck. Now, he played really well, but man, that career was short and he did not take them to the promised land.
I will say though, he was on pace to be an all-time great. It's those injuries, just the health. That's what did him in.
Yeah. Do you know who the last number one overall quarterback was that won a Super Bowl without having Sean McVay as his coach was?
Was John Elway taken first overall?
He was. It was after John Elway.
After John Elway. Was it Big Ben?
No, he was like 10th or something, 10th, 12th.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly where he was taken. You said first overall quarterback to win a Super Bowl.
He's got a brother.
Who's Big Ben? The quarterback has a brother?
Yes, who's a better quarterback?
Oh, Peyton.
Eli Manning. It was Eli Manning.
Okay, so you're, yeah, oh, right.
He was the last quarterback to be drafted number one overall that won a Super Bowl without.
Right, because he's younger than Peyton. Yeah, right.
Peyton's drafted first.
Right.
So.
And Peyton Manning is an all-time great. Let's
Peyton
be real
Manning,
here.
Peyton Manning, so all-time great. Eli Manning, if you take away those two Super Bowl seasons, he was not that good of a quarterback. You take away and those two Super Bowl runs were, you know, there was a lot of luck. Like, they were not the best team. They just got hot. But, you know, regular season-wise, I mean, how many seasons were they like, oh, my God, we got to move on from Eli Manning. What are we going to do? We can't have Eli Manning. And he was abysmal. Look at his career stats. Like, sure, he threw for a lot of yards, but man, not a great quarterback. Not an all-time great. Definitely not a Hall of Famer without those Super Bowls.
I mean, whether we like it or not, Eli Manning's probably going to the Hall of Fame, right?
Probably, but I would not vote for him. But you take away those two Super Bowls, and there's no, he doesn't even sniff the Hall of Fame. I don't even know if they let him in when his brother got inducted.
I mean, the picks were really his big problem, it seemed like.
Oh, a lot of picks. A lot of picks.
Because, I mean, he threw a lot of touchdowns and he threw a lot of yards.
But
Yeah, I mean,
I
I'm looking at the numbers, and I mean, yeah, he's nowhere near Peyton or many others.
yeah, but looping this back to the Bears is I just have this fear of you combine the poor history of number one overall quarterback with the Bears' history of inability to develop a quarterback, and that just seems like doom to me. But
Oh, my expectations are low. Even if Caleb Williams, the quarterback and the person, is starting to win me over a little bit, my expectations, knowing it's the Bears, are low. I know.
one scenario that former Bears scout Greg Gabriel has pushed real hard is that the Bears could trade Justin Fields and the number one pick. Now, that's an interesting one. I mean, obviously, you couldn't trade very far. You would have to trade with either Washington or New England.
So then you're saying, well, you don't want Caleb Williams?
I think you're saying that you know that whoever trades with you is going Caleb Williams, and you're comfortable enough with either May or Jaden Daniels to get that haul plus whatever you get for Fields and get a quarterback that you are confident in.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, do they like May?
I mean, you would have to.
Or
If you're
Daniel, I
making that one, that's risky because
very.
you would have to be in love with three quarterbacks. Or two, if depending if you just trade back one spot. But if you love three quarterbacks and you are like, I could hitch my wagon to any of those stars, you get whatever compensation you're going to get from Fields, and you'll get that compensation from moving back out of the number one pick, and get another guy and the haul. I'm not sure. I know Ryan Poles is not afraid of taking a swing, but that seems like a risky maneuver to me.
I mean, if we felt more certainty towards a guy like Drake May, then I could see it more. And I do feel like there are people out there who like Drake May, but the ceiling that Caleb Williams has is no doubt higher right now than Drake May.
I would agree.
I feel like that's just a hypothetical scenario to get people talking.
And honestly, if you're the Bears, you've got to do your due diligence on all these quarterbacks,
Of
not just the top
course.
three. You're doing Bo Nix, you're doing JJ McCarthy, you're doing Michael Penix. You're evaluating all these top quarterbacks, and I mean, that's an interesting scenario. If you're like, you know what, I really like two quarterbacks, then you have to sell Washington on moving up a spot, telling him that, you have the Patriots breathing, hot and heavy for the number one overall pick, and you squeeze whatever you can out of them to move that one spot. and then get your number two guy. So if you're like, man, I'm a toss up between Caleb Williams and Drake May or Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, then you try to pry whatever you can from Washington and move back one spot and probably walk away with a first and a second or multiple seconds and a player or some significant draft capital, and then let them take the toss up out of your hands. I can't decide between Caleb Williams and Drake May. All right, well, what about Drake May and a whole bunch of draft picks? Okay, that makes it sweeter for the pot. I just don't know if that to me seems like the same scenario of the double trade back, where they trade to second and then trade back again. Double trade back is, I put that in this category of, fun to talk about, but I don't think I'm going to see that happen.
Right. Yeah, I don't see it either.
But I do want to talk about the Justin Fields trade market. I hear a lot of people talking about, oh, it's not a robust trade market, not a robust trade market. I don't know if I believe that fully.
I think there is a market out there. It might not be robust. You might not get the deal of a lifetime, but I do think there is a market.
I mean, I think the Dolphins, Bills, Jets are set with what they're doing at quarterback. Patriots obviously are, do they feel more comfortable with a Justin Fields and a top flight wide receiver or one of the top three quarterbacks? That's the question. The Raiders have a need. The Broncos have a need. Steelers have a need.
They're pretty insistent that they're sticking with what they got, but maybe they're not showing their cards. I don't know, but I feel like they're sticking with their guys.
I mean, why would you stick with, I
Hey,
mean,
I'm not saying it's the right choice.
I just don't buy it. The Titans have a need. You have the Giants have a need. The Commanders have a need. Potentially the Seahawks. Interesting one. The Vikings could have a need, depending on what happens with Kirk Cousins.
And I think Kirk Cousins is most likely going back to Minnesota, but there seems to be some swirling things where maybe it's not quite as certain as we think. I do still believe at the end of the day he will be there, but we don't know for sure.
The Buccaneers have a need at quarterback because Baker Mayfield is a free agent, and the
Yeah, but
Falcons have a need.
wasn't there saying that it sounds like Baker Mayfield and the Bucks? I feel like he's going back there, isn't he?
I mean, if I'm a gambling man, that's what I'm betting on, but you never know. What if somebody swoops in and gives him a boatload of money? That's money talks in this league. So until they have a quarterback settled, they need a quarterback. They're not going to go out there with Kyle Trask. I mean, I would assume that. I mean, here's the thing: is Justin Fields of all those teams, is he their number one option? Probably not. There's probably some that could look at him as that, but y'all want to take the prettiest girl to the dance, but she's only going with one dude. So you could have all those plans, but if she turns you down, you've got to go to a different plan. And here are the list of the top quarterbacks that are free agents. Kirk Cousins, who is coming off a torn Achilles and is 36 years old. So it's a double concern there. Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Tyrod Taylor, Ryan Tannehill, Mason Rudolph, Jacoby Brissett, Gardner Minshew, Joe Flacco, and Jameis Winston. I mean, if you're putting Justin Fields into that list,
I mean, definitely take him over Sam Darnold.
I mean, he's on that list. He is either second or third, depending on how you're juggling it.
Yeah, I mean, I think Joe Flacco obviously built up a lot of value from last year, but was that a fluke or is that a sign of things to come next year?
I mean, there's a big body of work that says it's a fluke.
Right.
Jameis Winston is a backup. Gardner Minshew is a backup. Jacoby Brissett, backup.
Tyrod Taylor, Rudolph. Backup.
Tannehill is no longer a viable starter. Tyrod's
no.
a backup. Darnold is a backup. And so you're looking at Baker Mayfield, Kirk Cousins, Justin Fields, and three top quarterback choices in the draft. And that's for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, for 11 teams. It's supply and demand. So people are going to be like, oh, an anonymous scout said that Justin Fields may only get a third or fourth round pick. But you know what? When it all comes down to it is when somebody sees that they're not going to be able to trade in the top three for Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, or Drake May. And, you know, either the medicals don't look good for Kirk Cousins or it looks like he's locked in with somebody else. Suddenly going, man, are we bidding a big money contract on Baker Mayfield having another miracle year for multi-years? Or are we going to trade, you know, a modest pick for Justin Fields where we get him for 2 years for $30 million?
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, that all factors into it.
I mean, I think he's going to wind up getting either a early second or a next year's first.
That would be nice.
I think that's my prediction.
That would be nice.
So that's that quarterback market. And I guess you can throw in Russell Wilson in that mix too, because you're going to look to cut him. But I think I don't think he's going to a team without a multi-year deal in place. I think you're banking on you have the same issue with Baker Mayfield is, am I going to pay a lot of money for this dude and I don't know what I'm going to get?
Right, exactly.
So the combine happened. I don't take a lot of stock in it. It's, you know, you had a couple guys that just absolutely flew. You had Xavier Worthy, the wide receiver from Texas, ran a 4.21. 4.21.
Mm-hmm.
That is fast.
I could totally beat that. Huh, just kidding.
Well, did you see that Tom Brady ran a 40 at 40, almost 47 years old, and he was faster than his combine time when he was like 22?
That's hilarious.
That is mind-boggling because Tom Brady and I are roughly the same age, and I can't imagine running as fast as I did when I was 22.
Well, Tom Brady seemed to age backwards, so.
Yeah, he's, oh my God, what was that movie where
Benjamin Button?
Benjamin Button. He's got the Benjamin Button disease.
Yeah, no kidding.
But, you know, we're like a little over a week away from the free agency starting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, I mean, there's a couple positions where there's some players, but wide receiver is pretty weak.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you're just going to have to build to the draft there.
I mean, I think you're going to have to take some flyers on some low-cost guys.
Of
Hope
course.
that Scott and Velus Jones Jr. with a new offensive scheme can figure out who they are. I mean, honestly, Darnell Mooney is probably a top two, three, or four wide receiver in this free agent class.
Yeah. 'Cause didn't was it T. Higgins that got franchise tagged?
He got franchise tagged, but I don't know if they can afford him. I think they're going to try to trade him.
Which is fair, but that would mean we would have to trade for him if we were to acquire him. We couldn't just pay money.
Yes, we'd have to pay him money and trade for him. So I don't think that's on the table.
No, I don't think so either.
Mike Evans had a fantastic year, and he's an excellent wide receiver, but he's also going to be 32.
And didn't he say he really just wants to go back to Tampa Bay?
I mean, why wouldn't you want to? Like, you've spent your whole career there.
Right. At this point, you're playing because you like playing.
Yeah, and you like playing there, so don't disrupt your whole family life and lifestyle, for money that you already have.
Right.
Calvin Ridley is probably your best wide receiver, and he had a year suspension and then came back last year and was not overwhelmingly good. He's
Yeah.
fine. Michael Pittman, he's an option, but I don't love this free agent class of wide receivers.
Marquez Valdes-Scantling.
And it's not a great class of free agents, and
No,
they're
you're
all.
not getting a real difference maker here. You're getting just kind of guys to fill a roster, which can have some value here, but you're not getting a stud in his prime.
Yeah, I wonder if the Bears will throw an offer to Darnell Mooney. I mean, I don't think he'll take it because I think just the nature of this being a bad draft class or a bad free agent class that, he's going to get better offers. I
And I
mean, I
don't see OBJ coming here either.
no, and I don't think you'd want him, to be honest with you.
At this point of his career,
Yeah. Not saying he's bad. I just you got to balance the attitude with production with a potential
yeah,
rookie
and there are
quarterback.
certain teams that could take that on. Yeah.
I mean, I think you're going to
Yeah,
have to
I'm
go
looking at this
early.
list too.
I
Yeah.
think you're going to have to I think the Bears are praying that one of those top three wide receivers falls to number nine.
Yeah.
I mean, an idea that was
I think
floated
you're
as
right.
part of that compensation is if he goes, Justin Fields goes to Atlanta, is flip-flopping picks 8 and 9. But I don't think, I think Odunze, Neighbors, and Harrison are going to be gone in the first 7 picks. So I think even if you get that 8th pick, you're going to miss out on all three.
Yeah, probably.
Running back, interesting. I don't know how that market's going to shake out, but if you could get somebody for a reasonable deal, I mean, Saquon Barkley would be a nice fit.
Yeah, he would.
Derrick Henry on a short-term deal. Josh Jacobs. I honestly feel that the Bears are going to go after Noah Fant, the tight end from Seattle. I think because you always like to have a dude that you worked with from your previous place to come in and know the scheme. And I think Noah Fant would be a good fit with this team. And what's nice is the center guard free agents look good. So I'm assuming the Bears are going to sign a free agent center.
I mean, if you have a rookie quarterback next year, it would be nice to have a veteran under center.
Yeah, and there's some good veterans. When when Jason Kelce, who's a Hall of Fame level guy, is not the number one free agent center, tells you something about that class. The offensive tackle class is dog doo-doo sandwiches, which is funny.
Isn't Charles Leno a free agent?
He is. He got cut.
Cut.
So you can actually sign him, I believe, right now, because he's a veteran and he got cut. So I think he is actually – you could sign him at any point. You don't have to wait for the free agent period to open. The edge rushing class looks real good. Brian Burns, Danielle Hunter, Josh Allen, not the quarterback Josh Allen, the edge rusher Josh Allen, Za'Darius Smith, Jonathan Greenard, Bryce Huff. There's probably 10 solid edge rushers in free agency.
Daniel Hunter is kind of an interesting one.
I really like Josh Allen from Jacksonville. I think his production is good. He's 2 years younger than Danielle Hunter, and
you just want to say we can have Josh Allen on the Bears.
No, I just really, I think he would be a real good fit.
No, I don't disagree.
Yeah, it's I do like a couple of the edge rushers in the draft, but the way the draft is shaping up at this point is that number 9 pick is going to be too late for the wide receivers and too early for the edge rushers.
Mm-hmm.
So where you're looking at is the offensive tackles. You might be able to get the number 1 offensive tackle. You'll probably have, I think the first 8 picks are going to be offensive players. So you're going to have your choice of any defensive player you want and probably any offensive lineman you want. And the question is do you say, you know what, screw it, we'll draft an offensive lineman and we'll have a bookend offensive tackles for the next 15 years, 10 years. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how Ryan Poles wants to play that out.
Yeah, for sure.
And I guess the last thing I want to talk about is, you know, if anything else you want to talk about with the Bears is, it seems like the Bears don't want to tag Jalen Johnson. They want to just sign him. I hope that happens because I don't want to see them use the tag on him. Because, you know, it's to players, it's like a slap in the face.
Right, exactly. You don't want to – I'm not saying it would fully burn a bridge, but you don't want to damage it in any way.
Yeah, I mean,
and you got so much space, space to make a deal happen.
You do. You also don't want to burn it just because you have it. You want to optimize it. So I get it, but you know, it sounds like they've got it looks like Brian Burns is going to get franchise tag, so it takes one of the edge rushers off. But the Bears have not tagged him, and Tuesday is the deadline to tag somebody. So the hope is the Bears can get a deal done, a long-term deal before Tuesday, and just not have that on as an option. And just,
yeah, that would be really nice.
So that's the hope, but you know, if they don't have a deal in place, expect them to put the franchise tag on Tuesday.
Yep. Because, I mean, either way, it's in your best interest that Jalen Johnson on the team next year.
Absolutely. It's a much different team without him.
Right.
As it's funny, if you, as good as L'Jarius Sneed was this past season and helped bring them to the Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl, Jalen Johnson is the best free agent cornerback in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And statistically is significantly better than L'Jarius Sneed. And so it just makes a whole lot of sense for the Bears to bring him back. And so he'll be back one way or another. Just the hope is that they get that deal in place. And based on what Ryan Pohl said, it sounds like they're close. So let's hope that tomorrow we hear that's finalized, because I think both sides are gonna have, you know, they're gonna want to lock this down, because if you don't, you know, the agent, the player, and the team don't want that franchise tag. So it's in their best interest to get everything done in the next, you know, 48 hours or less than 48 hours.
For sure.
Do you want to talk some Cubs?
Sure.
So what are your opinions on the, let's start first, is we've got several spring training games that we've gone through already.
Mm-hmm.
And what is your, you know, you put your crystal ball in front of you. What is your prognostication of what the Cubs are going to look like this season based on what we've seen so far by, you know, 8 o'clock PM on March 3rd, knowing that they very well could sign up Blake Snell on a 1 year deal or something.
So I look at this team, and the thing that I think I'm most thankful for that can help carry this team is just how much depth they have and the quality of prospects that they have. Because right now, I think you can agree, the highlight of spring training has been watching these prospects play, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you and I both know that not all those prospects are going to be here for the long run.
No.
And
not the long run of the season or the long run of their careers.
Right. So, you know, assuming the Cubs are in a playoff race come the trade deadline, you know that you're going to be buying. If you're in the race, you're not only going to be buying, but you're going to be seriously buying. You know, last year you bought a Candelario, which is fine. But, you know, that was kind of more of a softer buy. That was making your team marginally better enough to where it can make a positive impact. But you're not like 2016 where you were putting all your chips on the table. This year, you could be a bit more aggressive as long as you're in that buying position with all the ammunition and the capital that you have. And spring training, but if the early indication of the value of these prospects are being displayed in spring, then you really gotta like the future of the organization with how many prospects they do have. Because look at what PCA has done so far. Look at what Kevin Alcantara hit a bomb today to center field. Look at Owen Casey. Have you been watching him?
Yep.
And Matt Shaw. And Matt Shaw is a guy I think the Cubs and the fans both look at and say, that ain't trade bait. Like, that's our future hot corner right there. I really do. I think they drafted him to be a long-term solution. And you see how hard he can hit the ball.
Yep.
That lightning quick bat speed. And then, you know, you look at the pitching depth that we have. So, you know, and I say this too every year. When you see Ian Happ, Dansby Swanson, Nico Horner, those guys, you're like, okay, they're just getting in there and they're just getting their at-bats. They're just stretching things out. Yeah, I think you can probably agree that we take more stock into watching the prospects because they do have something to prove. For guys like Dansby Swanson, it's just getting back in the groove. It's just an extended practice is what it is. But, I mean, what we're seeing from these young guys is encouraging. Now, here's where I'm going to be a little concerned, and I want to get your thoughts on this, looking ahead in my crystal ball. I'm concerned that the pitching rotation just isn't quite to par. I'm not saying it's bad, but I feel like it's a rotation that just has too many 4 or 5 type starters and just doesn't have enough 2s in it.
I could tell you two options that could totally bolster that.
Yes, you mean the two free agents that are still out there that are also Scott Boras clients?
I mean, you saw the deal that Bellinger got, and you saw the
Matt
deal
Chapman.
that Matt Chapman got, and it makes you go, if we could get him and either of those guys for a 3-year deal with, two opt-outs, so basically a 1 year if they're good, why in the world wouldn't you?
Oh,
You're
I agree. I
still under
agree, Pete.
the
I mean,
tax.
I do it.
I would too. Either one of them, I think, would be amazing. And that's a big win for the Cubs. I don't see any downside to it if because they're almost assuredly going to opt out and you're off the hook and you get one more year of figuring out what if Imanaga isn't the dude? What if Justin Steele has a step back? What if Tyone, isn't the dude that you thought he was? What if Hendricks gets injured again? Like there's a lot of question marks. You bring in either one of those dudes and it bullet, not saying bulletproof, but it adds an extra padding.
Reinforces.
Yes, it adds some reinforcement to that rotation and makes somebody that's gonna earn a rotation spot actually earn it and not just be like, well, he's the least bad option we have, which we're seeing on the White Sox.
Right. Well, and the other thing too that I was saying earlier on Twitter was even if a lot of these guys in the rotation have good solid years, the fact of the matter is you're probably having a little bit more pitch to contact type as a whole than you would ideally want in modern day baseball. And I think that obviously, you can look at Justin Steele. He can, blow smoke past guys. Imanaga doesn't necessarily throw hard, but he's got a lot of movement. But the other thing with Imanaga, too, is he's working on his fastball, and the stuff is good, but when he goes fastball heavy, he's been known to give up the home run ball.
Oh,
And there
yep.
is going to be, I feel like, some growing pains at points. And with Jordan Wicks, he's a young pitcher, and he's known for his changeup. He's not known for blowing 99 by you. It's you have some quality, durable arm types, but you don't have those stuff types that I think that they could use one more of. And when I'm talking stuff, I mean you are blowing smoke by, because listen, the fact of the matter is you have to miss bats in modern day baseball. You don't have to have an entire rotation of bat missers. Obviously, that's not realistic. And you run risk of high pitch counts and low innings pitch. But you to the postseason, you do need to have some of those guys on your staff that don't allow the ball to be put in play.
I don't see this guy as a viable starter option, but on the other side of town, Garrett Crochet has triple digits gas. And he's got some swing and miss stuff. And the Cubs as a whole lack a lot of that. And having pitchers that are, put ball in play type guys is going to be for the most part probably okay because you've got arguably the best up the middle defense in baseball between center field, short, second, and catcher.
In the regular season, yes. It's just when you get to the postseason, you need to eliminate as much variance as you can.
Oh, absolutely. I look at the Cubs as a their ceiling is a they win the division. I don't see them as a serious World Series threat.
Right now, no. But if you're in the race, you got to optimize as best you can to be one.
Right. And that's why I think you have to be in on Blake Snell or Jordan Montgomery, because those are the type of guys that you would be trying to get anyway at the deadline. And why have to trade guys that you don't have to trade if you can just throw some money at it? It's not like you're going to have to sign them to a long-term deal. I mean, we've got the regular season starting in a couple weeks. I'm sure both of those guys are itching to get a deal done.
Oh,
And
yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure Blake Snell is kicking himself for not going for that 6 for 168 that was rumored for from the Yankees. So I mean, I would see that we of the big four Boris clients so far, the only two that have signed similar deals where it's essentially, a short-term deal with lots of opt-outs. I'm expecting it to be for those two as well. And if you're Jed, is why on earth wouldn't you at least talk to them and be like, hey, we're willing to do this, even if you're overpaying for that first year. Is to get those guys without having to worry about trade compensation or competition from other people. Just throw some money at the problem.
You know,
Save those prospects for, if you've Morel can't play third base, is you go after a third baseman.
yeah, the Morel thing that I obviously I want Morel to be part of the team, but can he play third base every day? I'm a little worried. I think he can field the ball. It's the throwing, but if there's promise here, he's got a pretty good coaching staff. I mean, they worked miracles with Nick Madrigal. Can they do it with Christopher Morel? And I see Christopher Morel as, look, if you could just be a Ramos Ramirez at third, where you're not great, but you're at least serviceable, somewhat serviceable, we take that, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If he is within 10% of league average third baseman, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Yeah, we're not expecting a Gold Glover. We know we're not going to get that from him, but just serviceable is what we're looking for, because it really would be ideal to have Christopher Morel find a permanent home, or at least somewhere where he could play regularly. And if it ends up being something different where he goes to DH regularly, okay, fine. You don't want to be scrambling with him throughout a season.
Right. So I want to hear. I'm assuming that Hap is perfectly fine for opening day. What do you think is your opening day roster, and what's your starting five rotation?
I'm glad you asked, because it was about last week I took my first crack at a 26-man roster. So let me pull that up. There might be one or two amendments I'd make to it. As I said, to this roster, subject to change as it always does, because that's just baseball. Okay, so here we go. So I will start with position. And I want you to keep this in mind too, that as I look at this roster, we're at the early point in spring where it's going to be prioritizing veterans, if you know what that means. That makes sense, right? Because that's kind of how depth charts work. Okay, so here we go. Michael Busch, I'm just going through all position players. Michael Busch, first baseman, DH. Nico Horner, second base. Dansby Swanson, shortstop. Christopher Morel, third baseman, DH. Cody Bellinger, center field. First baseman, Nick Madrigal, third base bench. Patrick Wisdom, infield DH. Say Suzuki, right field. Ian Happ, left field. Miles Mastroboni, utility. Mike Tauchman, fourth outfielder. Yan Gomes, starting catcher. Miguel Amaya, backup catcher. Thoughts on that initial run through?
I mean, pretty close there. I have one name that I have making the roster.
Canario?
Yes. Here's my starters that I project. Happ in left, Belly in center, Saya in right, Morel at third, Swanson at short, Horner at second, Bush at first, Gomes catching, Canario as your DH.
I would not be surprised if that happened at all.
And I mean, we still have several weeks for, you know, I think we know most starters here, and I think DH is going to not be a dude. It's going to be
a flex. Yeah.
Yes. Depending on who the starting pitcher is and, you know, injuries and, who's hot, who's got the hot hand. But I think Canario is going to wind up being the primary option at DH, or at least a significant one.
I don't think that's far-fetched, because I put Patrick Wisdom on this initial roster, but would I be surprised if he didn't make it? No, not at all.
Yeah. But other than that, that's the only name that's in mine that's not in yours. And I didn't actually go through the full 26 because I didn't. So I don't know who I would leave off, but other than that, like, everybody sounds reasonable. I don't think PCA is making it.
No, and did you hear Craig Counsell announce today that their fourth outfielder is going to be Mike Tauchman to start the year?
Okay, I mean, that makes sense.
Yep. So starting pitchers, I've got five as of right now, assuming nobody is signed until somebody listens to this. Justin Steele.
Yep.
Jameson Taillon.
Mm-hmm.
Shota Imanaga.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Hendricks.
Yep.
Jordan Wicks.
Yeah, that's what I have too.
Left, right, left, right, left, right.
And the bummer so far of this spring training is Brendan Davis's concussion.
Oh, he was swinging so well.
I'm not saying that he was going to crack the roster or anything, but I just wanted to see him be healthy and swing the bat and see what happens. Good, bad, or ugly. I wanted to witness what was going to happen. And he gets hit in the head.
He can't buy a break, man. It sucks.
Yeah.
The talent is there.
It really sucks. And I know this isn't a serious concussion, but, you know, I feel like anytime anybody gets hit in the head with a pitch, something changes.
Remember Sammy Sosa in 2004?
Yeah. Yep. I just something changes in your brain chemistry when you get hit in the head with a pitch and you're not fearless in the batter's box.
How could you be?
Yeah. So I'm hopeful. I'm guessing he's going to start in AAA, and hopefully he tears it up in there. But I would love to see him get some more at bats in spring training, just to see how this is going to go. And again, I have slim and none are his chances of making this roster. But man, it would be nice for him to prove all the haters wrong.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, even if he bounces back and makes people change their Cubs farm system rankings, I think that's a huge win.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but you know, other than that, the injury bug has seemed to be not so bad so far, knock on wood.
Oh, I wish you didn't say that.
I knocked on wood.
I don't care. I don't care. Next thing you know, there's going to be a slew of injuries and your Kool-Aid glass is going to shatter into a million pieces.
Is there anything else, Cubs, you wanted to talk? I have a
no.
question.
Yes.
One question is the seeing the Chapman contract.
Uh-huh.
What do you think the Cubs should have jumped on that?
I'm very 50-50.
I'm
because part of me kind of wishes they did.
Gary texted me that this morning. He's like, Cubs should have done that. And honestly, if there's that pool of money that you're going to give, I would much rather you try to throw that money at Montgomery or Snell. I think they're the better bang for you.
I agree.
And I think Chapman of the four Boris clients is the most likely to not opt out. And I see him as, after this year, Chapman being a roadblock.
I don't think that that's a wrong thing to think. I don't think that that's an unreasonable thought. I really don't, because we know that with Matt Chapman, you're going to get a better fielder than Christopher Morel, but offensively, it's kind of a mystery because we've seen a bit of a decline in him. Now, 2-3 years ago, obviously he'd get more money in more years because he was putting up elite numbers, but we've seen a bit of a trend in the wrong way recently. So what I think is you might potentially be missing out on something, but you also might not be. It's really 50-50 right now. And I do feel like if Matt Chapman balls out in San Fran, it's going to feel a little harder that we didn't get it. But right now, I'm kind of just in a wait and see mode. If I could just harness the defense of Chapman and give it to Morel, then I wouldn't have to worry about it. But we can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it is I'm not going to compare Chapman with Morel, because if you did bring in Chapman, you're just moving Morel to DH. You'll have both guys in the lineup. It's going to be what is Chapman bringing offensively versus what are you going to get from your DH spot?
Right.
And, you know, or your combination production of third and DH. And if Canario gets that spot and does what we're hopeful he does, it ends up being a win. Even if Morel is slightly sub average, I say slightly. Like he can't be a bad third baseman. If he can play mediocre third base, I think you wind up ahead for this year.
Yeah, especially if he's hitting 30 homers.
Yeah, especially if there's a chance in hell that you're still trying to get a short-term deal for Snell and Montgomery. Even if, you know, if signing Chapman takes that even the long shot off the table, I think you're better serviced by getting one of those two. And if he's signing already, you know, if it would be probably a different story if Snell and Montgomery were off the table and Chapman was the last of the big names that you could get. And you're like, oh, you know what? Let's go for it. I get that. But he signed before the pitchers. So that's my thinking. I would much rather have you save that money for a lottery ticket.
Yeah, no, it's fair. That's fair. But one more question about the Cubs. Did you watch the presser with Cody Bellinger?
No, I only heard about it.
Yeah, I mean, I was working, but I was I listened to it on a pod, and you heard that Scott Boras spoke quite a bit, right?
Yeah, and that's weird.
No other agent would do that. Scott Boras is a unique circumstance, but I do think it showed this. Even if the market isn't what he wants, isn't what he was anticipating, he understands how it works. And I, you know, he's not a dumb guy. He is really not a dumb guy. He's not just a guy who's saying, oh, this guy hits ball hard, we're going to get him paid. No, he understands the stats and the in-depth look that you do with players. He made that pretty clear when he spoke. And I just thought it was really interesting. Consider the fact that there was, I don't know if I'd call it a spat, but you remember when Tom Ricketts said, you know, Scott Boras likes to deal with the owners and we don't really understand that. And Scott Boras was kind of like, well, I don't really talk to Tom, so I don't know what he's talking about. You know, despite that, the Cubs allowed Boras to sit down and be part of that presser. And even when it was kind of funny, somebody asked Jed Hoyer, like, oh, are you going to work on another deal with Scott about one of the other remaining free agents? And they kind of just looked at each other silently and smiled. So it's the fact that you can point and say, hey, the Cubs clearly do have a relationship with Scott Boras, because not only did they get a deal done with Bellinger, but they allowed him to be part of this press conference. Like, that's not nothing to me.
I agree. I don't think there's bad blood at all. I think it's a healthy competitive spirit.
Yeah, it's two guys playing some hardball in, yeah. And I think that, I think deep down, even if they won't say it, they both mutually understand how this game is played. And it's not just, it's not trading your lunch at the table with your friends. It's not playing Pokemon with your friends. There's more to it. And it's not personal with them, at least. With other teams, it is. I mean, Jerry Reinsdorf is pretty much what shut out Scott Boras by this point.
Yeah, I was about to say, is I think Boras Reinsdorf,
that's a legitimate.
I don't know enough to say contentious, but I would assume that Jerry hates Scott Boras and is not willing to even deal with him. And you know that Boras doesn't, you know, whoever the GM is for the White Sox does not have the free rein to discuss with Boras. So Boras has to go to Reinsdorf, and I don't think Reinsdorf has good feelings towards Boras. So that just seems a little more, for lack of a better term, contentious.
Well, and here's the other thing too, is like I just said, you remember what Tom Ricketts said about him talking with the owners. So if there's direct line with some of these owners, considering how involved Jerry is with baseball decisions, then you have to imagine there would have been direct contact between Boras and Reinsdorf, and you could see why there would be more of a rift, especially if they're not doing business with each other.
And I know, God, it's got to be like 12, 13 years ago, I know that Jerry Reinsdorf made an offhanded comment, didn't say Scott Boras' name, but obviously alluded to him because he was talking about Joe Creedy, and said that Creedy's agent made a big mistake. And I don't think Boras took well to that. So I don't think there's, you know.
Oh, wasn't that when Creedy went to the Twins?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I see Boras, especially there's a handful of teams that he has to keep a good relationship with, because they're the big spenders. And it's the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Giants, the Red Sox, the Cubs. And he's, you know, so even if he's not happy, I think he has to make nice with them, because they're the deep pocket teams.
Yeah.
I think Jed knows the same thing, is that, hey, I can't burn a bridge with him because he's the agent for a lot of key free agents. And It behooves both of them to maintain a good relationship. Even if they're not buddy-buddy, I think that they've, I'm sure that Jed has discussed Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery as long, along with Matt Chapman. And they've, I'm sure that that dialogue has been open in, you know, in some degree. But, you know, how close or how far along that is, you know, remains to be seen. But I just, you have, I mean, there's no way that Boris didn't at least broach the subject or vice versa.
Right, right.
But yeah, I mean, it was interesting to that Boris was there. And at the end of the day, Bellinger is where he belongs.
Yep, absolutely.
Other side of town, the White Sox. Yeah, they're playing spring training.
Yeah, they are.
They showed up. They're there, and they're not doing so hot, but they're there.
I know Makata and Eloy are hitting well, if that means anything to anybody. I've said this before, though. Would you be surprised if Moncada in a contract year just had like the best year of his career in a low pressure team situation?
I'm still fairly high on Yoan Moncada. Not high, high, but is it, like I told you, is if the Cubs could have pried him away, I thought that would have been a good option. But
he just, it's he has these nagging injuries that clearly get to him.
I think a big part of him is he, this is me talking completely out of my behind, but I just from my outsider perspective, I think he would do better in a more structured environment.
Could be. Could be. It
is, he seems like a dude that just very, very Sammy Sosa-like, where he just probably rubs some people the wrong way because he's just going to go and do what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a Craig Counsell might benefit him and get the best out of him. But, you know, his contract year, I would not be surprised to see him do well. And as lukewarm high as I am on him, I would not sign him to a long-term deal at all.
If you're the Sox, no, you got to see how this goes.
If I'm anybody, I would not sign him. You know,
fair, yes.
You know, I would short-term deal, even if it was higher money. I'm just not committed to him for a long-term.
Right, right. And I don't think it's a talent issue. I think it's both mental and physical.
Yeah.
Because there are times where I see him out there and I don't see, as cliche and as eye-rolly as this sounds, I just sometimes see him out there and I don't see a fully committed guy all the time. I just kind of see, here I am, you know, just doing my thing, making my money. And it's too bad because the guy has the talent to be a superstar. You're a strong switch-hitting guy that's supposed to have power. Hell of a fielder. He's a very good third baseman. I mean, the tools are all there. It's just, you know, he had that one great 2009. He had a really good 2021. But it's, for the most part, been just on paper incredibly disappointing. Now, last year he got off to another bad start, got healthy, and actually played very well down the stretch. He hit pretty well. And if you look at his overall numbers on the year offensively, you say, okay, they're not superstar, but they're not awful. So, you know, if that's trending in a direction where he can stay healthy, then yeah, I do think he can produce because I think the talent is there. It's just, you're at the point where you're like, you know, we can say you think you could produce, but you're really going to have to show us.
Agreed.
He's not 23, 24 anymore. He made his Sox debut after being traded from Boston in 2017. 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. It's now 2024. And that's what you can say about a lot of those core guys they built up that came up in, you know, that pre-2020 rebuild slash emerging phase, you know. And, you know, there's not as many left now. Tim Anderson's gone. He's with the Marlins. Obviously, Lucas Giolito is gone. But, you know, Eloy, you know the talent's there. It's really a case of just staying healthy. And we haven't seen that. When he does play, you know, he can play pretty well. You need to see him stay healthy. And Andrew Vaughn, I do think he's taking some positive steps. I think the overall numbers last year, are they superstar numbers? No, but they're fine numbers. And I think if you compare that to the year before, it is a step forward. And he's still fairly youngish. It's not, he's not like Yoan Moncada or Eloy or anything that are getting to their upper 20s, soon to be 30s. But, you know, you got to look at this team and say, you need to have a clear-cut road going forward. What is it? I mean, you're probably going to trade Cease, right, in the season? That's the hope?
I mean, I would think so. I mean, I honestly, it just makes sense to sign him, but you're not going to pay him, so you might as well just trade him.
And there's a lot of people theorizing over Luis Robert. I feel like, and this is just my educated guess that I could be completely wrong on, my theory is that they're going to try to build around him because he's still under contract for a few years because he signed that extension before he made his debut. Because, you know, some people theorize, are we going to trade him? Are you going to do a complete teardown? He's the one where I would be kind of surprised if they did trade him.
Nothing the White Sox does would surprise me other than pay somebody.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, that is an issue. I just don't think with Luis Robert, it's as clear cut and dry as what we think of what's going to happen with Dylan Cease.
I would agree. So do you have a guess on what the White Sox opening day roster is going to look like?
So I think, your catcher is probably going to be Martin Maldonado.
Mm-hmm.
First base is going to be Andrew Vaughn.
Mm-hmm.
Second base is going to be Nicky Lopez.
Mm-hmm.
Shortstop is going to be Paul DeJong.
Yep.
Third base is going to be Yoan Moncada.
Uh-huh.
Center field is going to be Luis Robert.
Mm-hmm.
Left field is going to be Andrew Benintendi.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the right field will be David Fletcher, who they brought over from the Diamondbacks.
Is it Dominic Fletcher?
Yeah, is it Dominic Fletcher? I can't remember his first name, but probably the one prospect they brought over.
Yeah, and then Eloy at DH.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And what's your five starters look like?
Cease.
Yeah.
Kopech.
Yeah.
The guy from the Braves.
Fetty.
Eric Fetty.
Soroka.
Soroka, and then Fetty. And then Chris Flexen, maybe?
Probably. I think at some point, Garrett Crochet is going to be fully stretched out. I don't know if he's stretched out by the time the season starts.
I'd be surprised if he was. But yeah, I mean, in the future, that seems like that's a plan they've been kind of wanting to lean on.
I mean, he's looked good. But I just don't know if he's a starter.
I don't know either. I really, there's nothing that's shown me he can be a starter.
And
frankly, I don't think Kopech is a starter either, but in a season like this, you might as well give him one more crack.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I see Garrett Crochet is what was his name? Andrew Miller, if that was on the Cleveland.
Mm.
is that guy that could come in, do six innings at any spot. You know, if starter didn't go, he could, and you were a, you know, you had bases loaded, he can come in and go two innings. You wanted to close, go two innings and close. You want him set up somewhere like that, that jack of all trades guy that could do one or two innings out of the bullpen and shut down kind of anybody. I sure. think that would be, and that was a very valuable role. Like Cleveland doesn't go to the World Series without that dude.
No, no.
You know, what a vital role that was, where like, it's just not a one inning guy. He could do two innings at for a long period of time. Like I think Crochet could be that kind of guy. And if you shorten a game like that, where you bring it down to seven innings, it's, it makes winning easier. Like, I just feel like that's a better spot for him. And I know it's not a sexy position because you're not the closer and you're not a starter, but there's a role for anybody that does that job well. No matter what your what job you do well, there's a role for you if you can do it at a really high level.
Absolutely.
And I think finding yourself as a consistent, high leverage reliever, even if you're not a big save number closer, I think you've earned yourself a job somewhere for really good money.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I agree.
But I don't know, this White Sox team, this doesn't look very good. I mean, are they going to lose 100 games? I think if they stay healthy, no. But they're not good either.
I agree. The one thing though is like, are you factoring in the potential of trading away Dylan Cease?
No.
And making yourself worse, because I think on paper this can be better than 100 losses, but I'm not saying a contender or a winning team by any chance. Because I mean, if you just take on paper and you do best case scenario, if Eloy does what he does and actually can stay on the field, and Luis Robert is a legitimate great player, and you know Yoan Moncada maybe stays healthy and plays well, it's not like your lineup is a total dud. It's just kind of beyond your top four guys. It's like it really drops off. Like Martin Maldonado is not going to be hitting much. None of your catchers are going to be an offensive force. I mean, Paul DeJong hasn't really been a legit run producer in a while now. Nicky Lopez is more glove than bat. So, you know, you have a couple of bats and dudes in there. It's just not really a full lineup. And your bench probably isn't anything spectacular either.
I'm going to throw an interesting over-under for you.
Okay.
Over-under is 90. And that is the collective number of games missed by Moncada, Luis Robert, Eloy Jimenez. Is it going to be over or under 90 games?
I'll go optimistic and say slightly under, but I'm not going to go super under. Yeah, I think that's where I'll go.
I mean, I think, honestly, I think that's a number where you're legitimately like,
if it was more, would it shock me? Hell no.
No, because I mean, you think about it, it's, you know, playing 132 games each of them. Like if you got 132 games out of each of them, you go, okay, Eloy.
I'm very Moncada, optimistic here.
Yeah. I think that's a tough one. I'm going to say under, where they're going to be healthier, but I think mostly it's going to be Luis Robert is going to be healthier this season. I think Eloy and Moncada are probably going to miss their chunk of games.
Yeah, I mean, I have no reason to doubt Eloy's not going to miss some time.
I mean, Eloy is the Brennan Davis of the White Sox.
Yeah. Like, or is Brennan Davis the Eloy of the Cubs?
tomato, tomato, tomato. it just can't catch a break health wise.
Yeah.
Like, they're the type of dudes that come back from a serious injury and do something good and then catch COVID. And you're like, oh, they're out another week.
He's like, oh, there it goes.
You want to talk a little Bulls or Hawks?
Mm-hmm. What's there to talk about?
I do want to talk about the game the Bulls had against Cleveland. Did you see how many rebounds as a team the Bulls had?
What was the exact number?
I think it was 74.
Wow.
That's a lot.
You mean the day after they lost to the Pistons at home?
You know, that Pistons game stunk, but that was just like an absolute historically bad shooting night.
It was, but I saw some of the effort towards the end by the Bulls, and I just flat out didn't like it.
Oh, I'm agreeing with you. I'm not arguing that at all. It was a bad effort, and you know, you've got to be, if you could have borrowed some of those rebounds from the next night and gotten some of those rebounds and put them back, you know, I think you handedly beat the Pistons, but you know, you didn't. You shot poorly, you didn't get second chance points, and you lost to a historically bad team.
Yeah.
And then you come back with, and you know, as funny as it is to watch the Bulls, who've been for how many years been an abysmally bad rebounding team, put up 74 rebounds, or pull down 74 rebounds, is honestly, you think about it, how many shots were missed that you had the opportunity for 74 rebounds?
Yeah, well, I guess the scales evened out a little bit.
You know, but with that win over the Bulls, Washington has now pulled even with Detroit for worst record in the NBA.
Mm-hmm. The Bulls have lost multiple games to them.
They have. When the Pistons had that awful losing streak, do you know?
Yes, they were their last win.
They were the last win before they started it.
Yes.
Yep. So looking at the draft lottery odds, man, the Bulls have a 1.5% chance of getting the number one pick. Wonk, wonk.
Wah, 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 wah.
Yeah, I don't know. That team, I don't know. I don't know how you solve the issues.
And it is clear that the Bucks live in their heads now.
Yeah, I mean, and you know what? And I'm not going to lie. I like playing the two bigs, Drummond and Vooch. Like, I actually kind of like that, but somebody needs to be able to shoot the ball.
And yeah, no kidding.
Vooch needs to figure something out.
I don't. I just think he's past his best days, and we're stuck with it.
And then the Blackhawks. Why is the NHL okay with teams seemingly gun towards Bedard? You had the dude from the Avs just totally slash him right in the wrist. And not only no penalty called, the league condoned it, and nobody on the Blackhawks did anything about it.
Yeah, and I've praised Nick Foligno a lot for being a leader on this team. And you remember what happened when he had the jaw injury, yeah. And Nick Foligno dropped the gloves, but
and that wasn't a dirty hit. That was
no.
a, That was just a really rough hit that had an unfortunate consequence.
And I agree.
And they still went after that dude hard. And that dude knew that had to happen.
Of course.
He knew he had to fight because that happened.
That's part of the deal.
Yeah. You're just like, you know what? Shit happened and I feel bad about it, but you know what? I'm going to have to drop gloves with somebody, maybe multiple people tonight. And that's just the way it's going to go. And they handled it and I was okay. It sucked that Bedard was out for several weeks. But you know, there wasn't a dirty play and it was and the Blackhawks handled it like they should. This one with, was Josh Manson. I did not like the way they handled that. I didn't like the fact that they just let that go. And it just sends a message to everybody else that, you know what are they going to do? They're not going to protect him.
Right. Yeah. It's,
I mean, if you're not going to win games, you better protect that kid.
You know, I agree. And I got to tell you, I'm not in the panic mode yet, but there have been lately just some of the effort I see. You know, we praise Luke Richardson for having this team play hard, and I really thought we saw that last year. There are times this year where I watch it, and I just don't, I don't know.
Yeah, as of late, I literally that's on my notes. I don't like the effort, and I'll admit when you're losing night in and night out and you're having trouble scoring points, it's got to be hard to keep putting that.
Of course,
it's, you know, so I get it. It's, but Luke Richardson's is gonna have to keep this up for another, what, how much left of the season?
20 some games.
Yeah, they're. Yeah, like 30 games left. Is you had better be able to get an effort out of them for those last couple months. And you know, that's just what you signed up for. Yeah, hopefully next year, some of the farm system kids are ready to come up and you have money to throw at somebody to have bodies that are healthy and can play to make it easier. But it's just the nature of the fact that you're a team at the very, very bottom of a rebuild and all the veteran players that you signed to help keep you afloat either got drunk and got grabby or, got injured.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's been some tough luck on this team. There's no doubt.
Yeah. And you gotta keep it together. And honestly, the trade deadline is what, this Friday? It's a couple days. And
what are you going to do?
You need bodies. Who are you trading away?
Nobody. You don't really have any veterans that, I mean, Nick Foligno you're trying to keep around, so because you extended him, so you're not trading him.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, your options to trade are probably Tyler Johnson, Colin Blackwell, Taylor Radish, and Anthony Bevelier. It's like, that is the hardest name to pronounce. It tongue-ties me.
Yeah.
I'm gonna call him the bee. But those are your options, and honestly, like, what are you gonna
get pennies on the dollar for them?
Yeah, honestly, I think your best bet is to make trades for overpriced players that aren't bad players that just make too much money. And
yeah, I agree.
And you eat those contracts. Like, I think that's your best bet because for twofold, one is you've got the cap space, is take on the assets to do that. And two is those are warm body reinforcements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You just need warm bodies out there. Is guy that's like, you know, he's not terrible. He's just like $2 million a year overpaid. You're like, who cares? We've got endless amounts of cap space. Take those guys on. That should be the trade that the Blackhawks are doing, is gaining things, like just giving out salary cap space, like the Oprah. You get cap space and you get cap space. I mean, that should be the move, and make no secrets about it. Be like, we have, what's the cap space look like for them? They got a good amount.
Yeah, more than a good amount, especially going forward.
Blackhawks spot track. Let's see. Agree. Is how much space do they have? What's the cap? They've got like 20 some million dollars.
Yeah, they got a lot of money.
They've got a lot of money. So, I don't know, use it. Use it. Flaunt it. You know, shake what you got. You know, and that, if nothing else, like some guys that are not bad, and you bring them on the team. Hey, come help us not lose. 'Cause this is not a good team. I mean, the San Jose Sharks are a team that everybody thought was just going to be such an embarrassment and run away with the worst record in the league. And here we are. The Blackhawks are worse.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
The only saving grace is if we get the number one pick again.
I know that's people are already talking about Celebrini and photoshopping him in a Blackhawks uniform with Bedard.
That would be hilarious. I don't even know how good he is, but you know, of the fact that it would just make everybody so pissed off is just hilarious to me.
Yeah. And I mean, this is another case where, like, when we're talking about the first overall pick, like, everyone's saying it's Celebrini. So, clearly seems like the guy.
Yeah. So, that would be absolutely awesome, having Celebrini there. And he's a college kid. So, you know, you feel more confident about him being able to jump right in.
Right, yeah, you know, he's played with some tougher competition, and
I mean, he plays at BU, so it's not like he's at a scrub school. He's at like one of those elite hockey schools.
Oh yeah, I mean, and you listen, like, you know, the NCAA hockey has really become a great place for fans to watch. I think the quality of competition really is at its peak. So, like you said, no scrubs.
Yeah, and you know, that's Boston University is arguably, like, you know, in the SEC of you know, the SEC equivalent of college hockey. Like, they're one of the top schools. So it's a dude that's coming from playing in a good organization that plays good competition, and you know, he's probably going to be in the NHL next year, regardless of who drafts him.
Right. I mean, when you draft guys from like BU, Minnesota, Michigan, Notre Dame, North Dakota, you know, you're getting some legit talent there.
Yeah. And then I know we touched on it briefly last week, is I'm hearing more and more buzz about, is there something really wrong with Jonathan Toews?
I mean, he wasn't there for the Chelios thing.
No, and I heard he made a video for his college team too. Was it North Dakota, North Dakota State?
Mm-hmm.
Made a video for them too, like, he's not playing. he's got the resources and the time to be able to just travel. Like, why isn't he? Like, what's going on?
I don't know. We know he's had health issues in the past. I mean, he missed the whole season because of it.
Yeah. I feel bad. I mean, he's still a young dude with a whole life ahead of him. Yeah. I hope we're all just reading into this way too much, but it does have a lot of question marks. Why the heck wouldn't he show up to things?
Yeah, chronic immune response syndrome. How much is it affecting him, impacting him right now? We don't know. But, I mean, the fact that pretty much the rest of the core was there and Taze, I don't think that's just Taze being selfish or, I think that it's, again, we don't want to speculate anything, but it's noticeable. You know, Seabrook was there. Keith was there. Hossa, obviously, is part of the organization. Sharp was there, and Sharp has a job with the Flyers front office.
Yeah. So it just makes you go, all right. Well, what is the sitch?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You hope that he's fine. But I also go, there's a, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Nope. I think I've said my piece.
Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. That's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com, or ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter, AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. Until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her, you can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van. And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears 31-7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down.